Always got to take a drink. Let that bourbon go down smooth.
Yep. All right. Here we go.
Beyond good, beyond evil, beyond your wildest imagination.
I gotta warn you, you're dealing with Scrappy Doo. That's more like it.
Last big party of the summer, folks. Let's go out with a bang.
Hello and welcome to Tooncast episode 246. We are continuing the Tooncast Origins here on the GeekCast Radio Network. I'm your special host, Optimus Solo, and this time around, we have the origins of Toonster, TFG1 Mike. Hello.
Hello.
We flipped.
Yeah, it's so weird because I've created these origins things that I do, and I basically I don't care who it is. If, you know, if friends of mine or even some strangers, you know, just people I've listened to on podcasts or whatever else, and I've kind of developed this interview style that I just ask these questions, and it's always so weird, you know, me having to give the answers now.
Yeah, I totally get that. You're not used to letting someone else be in charge, so.
No, not really.
Totally get it. All right, so if you haven't listened to any of the Origins episodes, you should go back and do that, because you can hear
yours and mine. Steve's. Yep, you can hear Optimus Solo's and Steve Megatron's.
Right, so we are starting this series of asking all kinds of questions to people who are all about cartoons, so you can follow us as we pick people's brains on what they love and not love and how they grew up on Toons and all that kind of stuff. So it's going to be interesting, now that I've answered all the questions, to be able to ask you the questions. So let's just start at the top. Question number one, Mike, did you grow up watching cartoons, and what are your earliest cartoon memories?
Yeah, I did. And it was so weird because cartoons and books kind of blended together when I was, let's say, 5, 6, and 7. And the reason why I say that is because I would always watch, back in the 80s, we had VHS tapes, folks. It's an old technology. I always had the Berenstain Bear VHS tapes of the old Berenstain Bear cartoon show. And I had the two books I can remember having is The Messy Room and Too Much TV.
Okay.
But I had other ones, and I always went back and forth with those, obviously. Stuff like, I think, 85, I was 5, so maybe the beginning of Thundercats, maybe the reruns of Transformers, I kind of remember. And as I, you know, was getting 6, 7, 8, 9, obviously, you know, you had Turtles and He-Man and She-Ra and all that stuff.
Yeah, I find it's hard being a child of the 80s to pinpoint what you are watching when, because of the syndication,
yeah,
and reruns, etc. So you can't always look back and see when stuff was airing and say, well, yeah, I couldn't have been doing that because that had come out at that time, because everything was airing ongoing throughout the 80s. Like, just because He-Man started before all those shows doesn't mean you couldn't have been watching it in 86, 87, you know, etc., even though it was, you know, had been started long before that. So it's interesting to try to pinpoint things when you're trying to think back at your childhood, if you're at least in the 80s. I know that's kind of somewhat unique to that decade, but so that's kind of interesting. So what cartoons were you watching most as a kid? Were you more of a Saturday morning afternoon consumer? Did you watch after school tunes, or a little of both, or what was it for you?
One quick thing I'll say about the pinpointing is the one pinpoint that I can say that I switched, because I do not remember a lot of the reruns or the rehashes. When Transformers 84 Generation 1 ended and Turtles started, that was a complete switch for me.
Mm-hmm.
From watching the Transformers to the Turtles.
Bingo. Now we're dealing with a real mind here.
When it comes to how, or not how, but where and when, it was everything. As long as I could watch a cartoon, I was watching it. You know, as long as I wasn't on the school bus, as long as I wasn't in school, obviously, I would rather sit at my cousin's and play Nintendo or watch cartoons all afternoon than go sit out on the swing set.
Hmm.
kind of thing. So for me, it was weekday mornings were always the hardest because I had to get up at like 5:30. I think the bus picked me up at like 6:15, 6:20. Mm-hmm. Yeah, school was real early in Massachusetts back in the 80s. I don't know what it's like today, but real early. So if I could catch 5 minutes of a Thundercats episode, I was happy, kind of thing. And then obviously stuff switched to weekday afternoons. You come home from school, you promise your mom that you're going to do your homework as long as you can watch these cartoons first.
Right.
Because for me, in the 80s, in the afternoons, it was, oh, come home, have a snack, watch cartoons. You know, that was like 3:30. By 5, 6, 7, we're having dinner. So by the time Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy come on, it's like, oh, that's the time you should do your homework. Because not that I disliked, I'd never have ever disliked Wheel of Fortune or Jeopardy. But at that time of television, it was either news programs, it was hard copy, it was a current affair, or it was the two major game shows, obviously, that played on weeknights, kind of thing. So yeah, it was. And then Saturday mornings was just a blitz,
right?
You know,
until they killed it. So we're talking about, for this next question, you know, you're about 5, 6, 7 years old. So what was your number one favorite cartoon as a small child, you know, before, you know, 3rd, 4th grade?
5, 6, 7, 5, 6, 7, 8,
somewhere in there. Did you have a favorite?
It's funny because I'm going back through it now and I don't remember a damn thing. Like, I remember the first 5 episodes. I do not remember a damn thing about Turtles past those first that initial opening 5-parter.
My childhood memories, I know this is about you, but just because you mentioned Turtles, like, and it made me think of something. Like, for me, my childhood memories of Turtles is not the cartoon. I know I watched it, but my Turtle memories is the live-action movie, the toys, the trading cards, things of that nature. I don't remember a whole lot about the actual cartoon like I did some of the other shows.
Yeah, I mean, the funny thing is, like, I recently was able to, at an ungodly amount of price, because it was... obviously, it's been out of print for a couple of years now. I finally got the complete series Turtle Van set, the DVD set. Uh-huh. So just because I'm going through some life changes right now and I have to refocus and figure shit out and whatever else, in order to relax, I'm going through and actually paying attention. Like, I'm in the middle of, I think I just started season, I'm in the middle of season 3 or just about to end it and start season 4. I don't remember a damn thing from season 2 to season. I remember nothing. And I'm like, Turtles have an alien episode this early in this. Like, what the heck? Where was I? Like, I remember the Killer Pizza Monsters, and more so I remember those from the video game kind of thing. But for favorite as 5, 6, 7, I gotta go with He-Man or She-Ra.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense. Those were some of the earlier ones for us, for sure.
Yeah.
So what are some other cartoons that you'd like? Do you have a favorite type, like a genre or style that you kind of gravitated to throughout your childhood?
The interesting thing about the 80s cartoons was, at least in my, and I'm sure I can look this up and get the proper information, but cartoons today, they most of them they're 3D. Well, ours were kind of 2D, not really, but, you know, they were that flat, cell-shaded animated style that wasn't the things popping out of the screen. Yes, they had pops and everything else, but it wasn't like that. It was that old style. It was the 80s style of doing stuff. And for me, other ones that I enjoyed and I liked, for the genre type, it was mainly the boys action stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I've already said, He-Man, you know, even She-Ra, even though She-Ra was supposed to be a girl's show, us boys watched it because we were, you know, head over heels for She-Ra or whatever kind of thing. Same thing with Jem. Jem was an action cartoon, and that's how I view the 80s, all of the 80s cartoons. It's not necessarily the boys' action cartoon or the girls' action cartoon. It's just action. action cartoons. Mm-hmm. You know, He-Man, She-Ra, Jim, Transformers, G.I. Joe, Turtles. What other ones?
Thundercats, Silverhawks.
Thundercats, Silverhawks.
Mask, probably at the time.
Do we really have to illuminate that weapon?
Yep. So, okay. And how did that change as you got more into like your early, preteen, teen years? Did it change as far as what kind of cartoons you gravitated towards?
It was interesting. Again, I can pinpoint when I stopped watching one and started watching another. But again, I remember nothing. Well, like you said, in that time from the time the cartoon started for Turtles and the time the movie hit, you had the games, you had the this, you had the that, you had all this stuff. So I can see that switch. I remember in 89 and 90, it was more of a switch to The Simpsons. And I my dad at one point, or my stepmother at the time, thankfully she's no longer my stepmother.
Oh, finally, I get the remote.
They were like, oh, you can, I don't know, I think it was Santa's Little Helper, the very first episode they aired. We were at my ex-stepmother's brother's house or something, and Bart said something, or Homer was choking him. I forget what the hell scene it was in the show, but one of the adults, oh, you can't watch that, and turned it off. And obviously that's going to come later in the questions. But it was one of those things where things changed because life was changing, and I didn't have the normal kind of childhood into teenager thing. So when I was 12, it was 92. 92 was X-Men. 92 was Batman the Animated Series. I didn't watch that much Batman the Animated Series. I was all over X-Men and everything else. It wasn't that I didn't like it or I didn't notice it. I did. I just wasn't – it just wasn't there. And then in 93 – from New Year's 93, from Christmas, New Year's to 92 into 93, I ended up moving to Kentucky, and things were a hell of a lot different, and cartoons didn't seem like they – like I kind of switched into – and I know you're going to hate this answer because you're not a fan of the franchise. I switched from cartoons to live action, and I went to Power Rangers and VR Troopers and Beetleborgs and all that stuff.
Tommy, I know. I know you're the Green Ranger.
Well then, Pink Ranger, you should also know that you and the other Power Rangers will soon be destroyed.
Let us help you. We can break Rita's spell.
Rita is my empress. She will soon rule the world.
Tommy, please, let us help you.
You have been warned.
You. I'll just act like you didn't say all that, and we can just continue on. So how often do you go back and rewatch any of the cartoons you grew up with? I know this is kind of a silly question for you and I, but
have you people listened to the last 245 episodes of this podcast? It depends on what it is. It depends on, because I have been podcasting for 13, almost 14 years now. It depends on if I need to do something with the cartoon, or if we're going to be doing, a review series here on Tooncast, or if we're going to start a whole nother new review show kind of thing. For just pure enjoyment, I go back to various episodes of the G1 Transformers cartoon. I will not watch all 98 all at once or all in one sitting kind of thing, but if I need to pick me up or something, I will go back and watch, The Ultimate Doom, not really a pick me up episode, three-parter, but you know what I'm saying? Like, I'll go back and watch various single episodes. And I do that with Transformers. I kind of did it with Thundercats when Thundercats first hit Hulu recently in the last couple of years. Ever since we did the full-on He-Man stuff and reviewing all the Filmation, I have not gone back and watched any of the original Filmation He-Man since we finished that part of Powers of Grayskull series.
Yeah, sometimes you get enough in one fell swoop, and I guess the way I see it, like, there's so much stuff I'd want to watch that I can't always justify rewatching stuff I already have rewatched. So check out some new stuff. So, all right. And what cartoons that aired when you were an adult have you liked the most as far as stuff that came on later on in life?
Hey, I care about you more than any old egg sandwich.
Oh, Grumpy.
Don't go there. I'm on the verge.
So stuff that's been out since I would say I was, so the last, let's say, 22 years.
Yep. Since the year 2000.
Yeah. I really, really dug the Mike Young Productions He-Man show. You can go back and listen to Powers of Grayskull series, folks, and hear us gush about the Cartoon Network He-Man and the Masters of the Universe. I thought that was one of the good ones and one of the ones I really enjoyed. I'm trying to think of other... by this time, by 2000, I was really into the DC Animated Universe. So by that time, I had already seen all of Batman the Animated Series, Superman the Animated Series. I tell you, I had a major, major free... I remember this explicitly on Kids WB. When Batman Beyond first debuted in 1999...
The voice kept calling me Bruce. In my mind, that's not what I call myself.
What do you call yourself? Oh, yeah. I suppose you would. But that's my name now.
Tell that to my subconscious.
I heard that opening music by Christopher Carter, and I saw that opening intro, the main intro of that cartoon show, and I'm like, what is this? Because at that time, it had been years since I had seen some of those characters and whatever, and I'm like, ooh, a new Batman show? Ooh, I see old Bruce White. What is old? How old is Bruce now? When is this supposed to – what is going on here? And I just love Batman Beyond because it was a fresh kind of – it's not Spider-Man, but people draw Spider-Man allegories to it because it kind of is. It's basically a teenage Batman because you take Terry McGinnis and put him in the bat suit and you have old Bruce as kind of like the Alfred thing. So Batman's the original Batman is retired and – you know, he's now training this new kid. I thought that was really fresh and interesting. And then, you know, you move on to Justice League and Justice League Unlimited and all of that. And by 2007, we had Phineas and Ferb on Disney Channel.
I know what we're doing today.
Okay, Michael, if we're going to tackle this podcast thing, we've got to do something really special. It has to be cool, daily, in audio form, and undetectable by radar. Something that screams summer. I know, let's do a Phineas and Ferb review podcast. We'll call it the Podcast Organization Without a Cool Acronym, or PALCA for short. What do you think?
I think if we're not careful, Candace is going to bust us.
You can find PALCA on the Geekcast Radio Network, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and all of the other methods you find podcasts.
Okay, then. Carry on.
You know, we eventually had the 7D on the Disney Channel, which sadly only got two... For as much grief as we gave, rightfully so, to Snow White in episode 29 of this very podcast, the 7D is by far the best thing they ever did with the Seven Dwarfs.
Yeah, I enjoyed that cartoon. Absolutely. What about any, was there any more that were, you know, made for adults? You know, not necessarily like mature, but like mm-hmm. anything that was, you know, not necessarily aimed at kids that you enjoyed watching as an adult?
Not really, because
like Adult Swim type stuff.
Yeah, no, I've never been, like, if Adult Swim or Toonami was showing reruns of the shows that, you know, were at that point, you know, 10 or 20 years ago, and you know, if they're re-showing, like, I don't want to say Super Friends, but Toonami would often re-air like Thundercats or Transformers or something. Right. They have some sort of action block on the Toonami thing, but I never get into the Adult Swim stuff or any of that.
Okay, fair enough. What about any cartoons that have come along that you've at least watched an episode or so of that you ended up really being disappointed about, you know, something you were looking forward to that just didn't turn out how you wanted it? Or is there any cartoons that just, like, grind your gears that you just cannot stand?
It's been one of my main rules, even though I've broken it a couple of times. This podcast will never have a full-on Ren and Stimpy in-depth thing because I am not a Ren and Stimpy fan at all. I do not like gross cartoons. Like those cartoons that want to be gross just to be gross kind of thing. Things that disappointed me? No, because I don't like this is again, this is why, and I've said this for years. People are like, oh, you know, you've only seen the trailer to Spider-Man No Way Home. If you don't like it, how do you know you're not going to like it unless you see the full movie? The trailer is an advertisement. It is supposed to advertise to you to see if you're going to actually want to watch what the trailer, you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. That's the whole point of trailers and advertisements and things like that. And if I see an advertisement for a cartoon that I don't like, then I ain't gonna
watch it. What about Princesses of Power?
That's a whole other bag of swords. But it's not that. So that for me is when I first started, and I like some of the stuff they do. I don't watch all of their videos, but there's a YouTube channel called Clownfish TV, and because I had not actually watched She-Ra and the Princesses of Power on Netflix at the time, but I had watched their videos, kind of angry videos that they were doing about it, and it just kind of like, okay, well, if it's that bad, then why should I waste my time? That's my thing. If it's something that I have zero interest in, I am not going to sit here and waste my time. And the other thing is, between the time, obviously, since I was a kid to now, I podcast about literally almost everything I can. Again, it's look at the last 245 episodes of this podcast. I do stuff in order to be able to come on the show and talk about it. I'm not going to sit here and waste my time and just record a full-on negative hate-filled I'm not putting out a hate-filled podcast because nobody wants to listen to that.
You get enough of that when we do our episode-by-episode reviews. All right. Growing up, did you or you and your friends ever pretend to be cartoon characters that you saw on TV, maybe outside, at home, maybe at school recess, maybe for Halloween, any dress-up or almost like cosplay before it was a thing?
I mean, I've dressed up as cartoon characters for Halloween when I was a kid, but we never, like, the reason why this question is here, folks, is because it comes from the ToyCast Origins question of, you know, did you and your friends ever act out playing with your toys or say, you know, you're going to hold the He-Man action figure and I'm He-Man and I'm going to blah, blah, blah. With cartoons, I never did that. I was... The three Halloween costumes I can remember the most outside of just your standard Adam West Batman cowl thing. You know those old Super Friends mm-hmm. or whatever masks and whatever. I was Donatello one year.
Nice.
Sadly, I did not have a full wooden bow, but I had the headband. I had all the stuff. I was 89, Michael Keaton, 89 Batman one year. And I was Skeletor one year.
Nice.
And luckily, and nowadays it would be much more intricate if I could actually, if I had the body to pull it off. Luckily, back in the 80s when I was still skinny, they just had Skeletor masks or Skeletor t-shirts or what. You didn't have to.
Right. It was always the same. It was the plastic mask that you wore.
With the Batman, with the 89, Michael Keaton 89 Batman costume, my mom went all out for that one, though. She actually sewed the cowl, the gloves, and the boots for me. Nice. We used black pair of sweatpants and just a sweatshirt with an iron-on, Batman emblem. Nice. But she made the cowl, the boots, and the gloves, and it was really, really cool.
Excellent. So speaking of characters, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Who is your all-time favorite villain from any cartoon?
Villain? What about hero?
We'll get to there.
Okay. Villains first, huh? Yeah. I can't pick just one.
Gun to your head.
I just can't pick one. And I have a lot of rediscovered enjoyment of 87 Turtle Shredder. That guy, man. Especially with the late, great James Avery doing his voice. Oh, man. Oh, it's so good. I also am going to say Transformers Prime Megatron. So it's still Frank Welker Megatron, but it's the modern version where he kind of... It's not the low gravity high. It's deep down. He changed it. He flipped his vocals on it.
We Decepticons now face our darkest hour.
And I just love what Frank did for Transformers Prime Megatron. It still sounds very G1 without it being the actual G1 voice.
Okay. Any others that you want to throw in there? Or just those two? You dressed up as Skeletor for Halloween.
Yeah, I know. Just kidding.
All right. Shredder and Megatron, those are good picks.
Yeah, I liked Skeletor, but I liked Brian Dobson's Skeletor a little bit more because he, as much as I still love Alan Oppenheimer, Skeletor from the 80s never really got the chance to really win. And I know that's the point. You know, you don't want the villains to win. You want the heroes to win. But,
right.
After we've watched all of those cartoons, all 130 of them, there isn't a single episode I can point to that Skeletor almost really got his way
right
up until the very end. But I still love the voice, though.
All-time favorite hero.
Well,
please don't make me throw up in my mouth.
How would I make you do that?
I'm not going to tell you.
So basically, Tommy Oliver, the green and white ranger from Power Rangers.
Oh, geez, that's even worse than that.
cartoon character heroes. I got to go with, for someone to look up to, I got to go with Panthro from the Thundercats.
Okay.
All right. If we're going to do it, let's do it.
I loved Panthro, and by the time I was 7, 8 years old, we were, 5, 6 years into the Cosby Show, and to realize that Panthro is Grandpa Cosby was right. Wow.
Mutants! Always those blasted mutants!
What about any other characters that aren't necessarily heroes or villains that you really were gravitated towards or you really enjoyed?
Well, I wasn't done with the heroes
list. You only get one. This is all-time favorite.
No. Yours had like 3 on it, I remember.
The way you've written this question is end-all, be-all.
Yes. But again, with the way...
Highlander, there can only be one.
Yeah. The way you answered the question, the way Steve answered the question, we had multiples.
Well, we'd like to cheat.
Yeah, well, exactly. That's the whole point, because we do the show. Other hero characters, I loved Darkwing Duck.
Okay.
Loved how silly he was. And obviously, the one true prime, Rodimus Prime.
That's the part that was going to make me
fun. You know it was going to be in there, because really, he got a raw deal. So.
All right, I'll put you on the spot then. You mentioned Shredder as a favorite villain. I know you didn't mention the Turtles as a favorite hero, but if you have to pick one Turtle, who's it going to be?
Donatello.
Okay. Other characters, maybe sidekicks, maybe just not heroes or villains. Maybe it was more of a comedy show or something like that. Any other characters that you really gravitated to?
As I've grown older, I feel like certain parts of my anger I identify with X-Men 92 Cal Dodd voicing Wolverine a lot of the times. If you look at the X-Men, the animated series cartoon from 1992, which is 30 years old this year.
Going after her.
No way, Wolverine. We've got a job to do first.
I go. I wanna go. Out of the way, Gumbo.
Cal Dodd voicing Wolverine Logan in that, I've felt his emotions in the last 10 or 20 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, any characters that you just couldn't stand, despised, annoyed by, hated?
Every single 80s sidekick, they all get the number one worst.
Except for the one that you like.
Which is?
I don't want to say his name, but you're talking about T-Bob, you're talking about Snarf, you're talking about Orko.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know that Scrappy-Doo is also a crappy
sidekick. Oh, Lord, stop it. Don't even go there.
He's just like all them.
I forgot to put him in the hero column.
You said all sidekicks.
You're dealing with Scrappy-Doo now. Prepare to splat!
Yeah, all I said all. Well, technically, yeah, Scrappy is an 80s sidekick. Still, I still defend Scrappy to this day because he...
It's just a joke for all the people that have watched or listened, I guess, listened to this podcast for the last
X number of years. Yeah.
Yeah. Old battle between me and Mike on Scrappy-Doo. Anyway, what about, now obviously we could name 1,000 of these because we're both very into voices and voice actors, et cetera, that have lent their skills to a lot of these characters that we've talked about. So let's try to keep it somewhat narrow, but who are kind of some of your favorite go-to voices from a cartoon or voice actors in general?
I was not prepared.
Let's see. Let's go to the interview section on geekcastradio.com. there are so many. I will say that getting to the one thing in all the interviews that we've done is, even though we've heard Larry Kenney as Lion-O, as Sonny the Cocoa Puff Bird, as all of the voices that he has done.
Sword of Omens, give me sight beyond sight. I see a new episode of Tooncast coming this week.
I don't have a sense of trepidation, but like right before we get on any of these calls to do these interviews, I'm like, what are they going to sound like? What are they going to be like? Because you never know, because you're watching them do a performance and you don't even see them. You see their animated counterpart kind of thing. Let's just go down the list. Larry Kenney, Gary Chalk, Ian James Corlett, Phil LaMarr, Greg Berger. Greg Berger was hilarious. Kevin Conroy. Kevin Conroy is one of my single favorite interviews I've ever done because he has everyone that was in this sad, tragic event has a story, but the best story I have ever heard about September 11th was the story that Kevin Conroy told us in the interview with him.
And then after you had gone to do some cooking duties after the 9/11 tragedy to help out in New York. You want to tell that story?
You want me to tell that story?
Sure.
It's got a lot of foul language in it. Should I clean it up?
No, that's fine. Oh, we are so explicit here at the Geekcast Radio Network.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Okay. Well, you know, I live in New York. I live in New York, and after the attack, everyone wanted to help. I mean, the thing that was amazing, you always see those pictures of everyone running away from the buildings as they were coming down with the covered with soot. But what you don't see any pictures of is everyone running back. As soon as the dust cleared, people started running back to try and, you know, help people. And so I called, there was a number set up. Everyone was being told to go to the Javits Convention Center, and that's where they were coordinating the volunteers. So I went to the Javits Center, and they already had everybody they needed. They had such a huge turnout. They said, look, we've got everyone we need. We have all the tunnelers. We have all the diggers. We have overwhelmed with volunteers. We don't need anybody. So I was feeling so dejected. I was on my way home thinking, what am I going to do? I want to help. And I stopped off at a coffee shop, and there was a guy there covered with dust who had just come from Ground Zero and said he was talking to the waitress about how he was working in a kitchen there. And I said to him, this total stranger, I said, you know, I just came from the volunteer place. They told me they didn't need anybody anymore. He said, do you really want to volunteer? I said, yeah. So he wrote down this phone number. He said, call this number. They need people. This is the kitchen at Ground Zero. So I called them up, and they said that they did need people. And they said, do you have any restaurant experience? I said, I'm an actor. Of course I have restaurant experience. What do you need? You know, actors can do anything in a restaurant. They said, well, we really need cooks. I said, well, I worked in a short order cook when I was going through Juilliard. They said, are you free now? And I said, yeah, I'm between jobs. They said, no, we mean right now, like tonight. We need someone tonight. I said, yeah, I'll be right there. So I ended up doing the night shift. So it was like from 6 p.m. to about 6 a.m. And it was a few blocks away from the actual pit. But it was a big, big, like, cafeteria that they had commandeered. It was a restaurant, I think, called Nino's. It was a big old restaurant. And they had taken it over, and all the work crews would come in covered with dust and soot, just exhausted. And it was a very hot September. So it was a very depressing atmosphere. And there were these huge work lights set up all over Lower Manhattan, setting it up. It looked like a moonscape. Because it was a big search site, and people would come in, and there was just a sort of rumbling kind of melancholy mumble going on, because, you know, everyone was so overwhelmed by what had happened. And I was working this night shift, and this guy who was next to me one night goes, so I'm an architect during my day job. What's your day job? I said, well, I'm an actor. He said, yeah, but do you do some special kind of acting? He said, I thought I knew your name. I said, well, I really work in animation. I do voices. He said, I knew it. You're Batman. I said, how did you know that? He said, everybody knows who's Batman. I said, no, everyone does not know who's Batman. He said, oh, my God, the guys are going to go crazy if I tell them that. I said, no one's going to care. He said, are you crazy? He said, watch. So he goes out in the dining room, and he goes, guys, you're not going to believe who's been cooking your dinners. It's Batman. And there was this long pause, and you hear it from the back of the auditorium. Bullshit! And then someone else says, make him prove it! So I'm back in the kitchen, right, in this big, echoey kitchen, and I do, I am vengeance. I am the night. I am Batman. And then there's this long, long sound. So you hear it from the back of the auditorium. Holy fuck, that is Batman. They all start pouring back into the kitchen, and suddenly you hear this laughter, and this guy's like, hey, you know that episode where you and the Joker, you know, I watch that show all the time with my kids, and you know, hey man, what's that Danish lady like? And everyone wanted to know everything about the show. And then the guy who had recognized me, the architect, says, what's it like to be Santa Claus? Because that's what happened. Santa Claus just got here. And it was true. It was like suddenly people had something else to think about, you know?
Yeah.
And so I emailed Andrea the next morning at Warner Brothers, and I told her what had happened that night. I wrote it all as a story. And I said at the end of it, you know, what we do is not insignificant. We're already contributing. And she said she circulated that all around Warner Brothers. She said everybody at Warner Brothers loved that story.
Yeah. It's just an amazing story because, you know, a lot of, you know, and that goes to like, you know, sometimes we will ask a question of, you know, do you get recognized, you know, on this? Because a lot of times voice actors, you know, in person don't get recognized unless, you know, you're at a convention and a big sign says, hey, this is Kevin Conroy voice. You know, I mean,
I assumed this would be a completely anonymous job. And for many years it was. You know, in the early 90s, no one knew what I was doing. It was when the internet developed and you could just Google someone's name and then get the picture, and suddenly everyone knew who was Batman. You know, it's really since the internet that people know who's doing what. And for many, many years, it was completely anonymous. And I was used to it that way. I kind of liked it that way, actually.
Tom Kenny's interview was weird and wacky. Like, literally, he came on the line and he was immediately SpongeBob. And I'm like, where's Patrick? It was so funny. But yeah, I mean, there are just so many of them. Jess Harnell, Pat Fraley. And there's so many that we've lost, like James Avery. I mean, I know technically James Avery was an actor and he did some of the voicing stuff, but you look at James Avery as Uncle Phil, and then you listen to him and watch the animation for Shredder, and you can't believe that that's the same guy. And it's just amazing the range of, you know.
Yeah. Any specific voice work that stood out, like a certain character's voice that you just always remember?
I gotta say, it's different because it's a different actor that portrayed the character, but I have no, like, I love them both equally, but I love what the late, great Dick Gaudier did with Rodimus after Judd Nelson was the character in the movie. But just the way that the Rodimus voice sounded in season three versus what it is in the movie. Because in the movie, he's going through this whole transition. He's this young, hot rodding teenager. He's this, he's that. And then at the end, he gets leadership thrust upon him as the chosen prime.
It's a pity you Autobots die so easily, or I might have a sense of satisfaction now.
You got the touch! You got the...
Arise, Rodimus Prime.
Yeah! You know, and then in season three, obviously, I don't think you were going to get Judd Nelson back. It would have been awesome. But Dick Gaudier was an awesome voice actor to voice that character. And just every emotion that he put into that role, it was just so, so good.
Yeah.
Why'd I have to be the chosen one?
And of course, like I said, we can't list them all. I know Mike also is huge on Rob Paulsen and Maurice LaMarche.
Absolutely. Yep.
You know, Peter Cullen, Frank Welker, et cetera, et cetera. So, all right. Did you ever own anything based on a cartoon? Toys, comics, coloring books, merchandise of any kind? Lunchboxes?
Everything.
Was it all the same cartoon or just
Between toys and lunchboxes and board games and all of it was all so random. It was a smorgasbord of stuff. The funny thing is, I had very little Transformers stuff. Like, I remember having Blitzwing. I remember having Astrotrain, because Astrotrain for me personally is my favorite overall G1 Transformer as an actual toy. The original, I want to say 86 toy that was released. I love Soundwave and Blaster, but I had Blaster and I had his cassettes. I never had Soundwave as a kid. Sadly, I had a buddy of mine who had Soundwave, and he wouldn't even let me look at the damn thing half the time. But anyway, I remember having the Knight Rider game. I remember having various versions. The one version I never had was the talking kit car version, where it was, you know, there was a Michael Knight doll that came with it. But if you press the license plate, it would be William Daniels doing various kit clips. But I had the Knight Rider board game. I had the Knight Rider audiobooks on tape. I still have my Knight Rider thermos somewhere around here. I don't know where it is, but it's somewhere. It might be in storage. We all had action figures, folks. I had almost every single good and bad guy from Masters of the Universe, from He-Man and Master of the Universe. I had Grayskull, I had Snake Mountain. The only thing I never got for playsets from Masters was Palace of Eternia. I never got that.
Right.
And by the time She-Ra kind of came out and they were releasing all that stuff, I was already into Turtles and things like that and whatever.
All right. This is a tough question here. There's a lot riding on this, Mike. You know that this is like one of my passion, labors of passion. So what is your favorite cartoon theme song? There is a right and a wrong answer.
Go Power Rangers.
You make one more Power Rangers reference on this. I will sabotage this whole episode.
No, if I have to just pick one, all right, I'm going to cheat. I'm going to pick one from each decade, one from the 80s, one from the 90s. The 80s is definitely season 3 of Transformers Generation 1. Not that I disliked the season 1 and season 2 themes, but the season 3 theme was more action-packed to me.
Mm-hmm.
And then for the 90s, Darkwing Duck. Darkwing Duck of mystery, Jimmy out of right, swoops out of the shadows, Darkwing of the night. Somewhere some villain schemes, but his number's up.
That's a good one. I don't know about favorite, but...
I mean, you know, they change all the time. I mean, it's not like I'm making a top 100 list of my favorite cartoon theme songs.
Who would do something like that?
You.
Oh, okay. obviously, you've at times had a lot of these cartoons, whether it be on DVD or Blu-ray or digital copies or different things of that nature. Are there any that you have like a complete set of? What's your like crowning like achievement as far as your collection goes?
So I don't have much of a physical DVD collection anymore.
Right.
What's
the favorite one you've owned over time, though, whether you have it now or not?
Cartoon. It's only because... Oh, you know what? I'll say it this way, because it can tie into my Funko Pop obsession. They released a couple years ago a Blu-ray set for Batman Beyond. And if you ordered a... You know how they have all... You know, steel book at Best Buy, or this at this store, this at that store. They had... I honestly think it was Best Buy. If you ordered it, you would get a You would get a the black metallic variant version Funko Pop of Batman Beyond. So I think that was one of the best sets that I had, because most of the sets that I had had when I was collecting DVDs, I never ended up getting the Transformers Shout Factory Matrix set. I never got the G.I. Joe Foot Locker. I mean, technically I can say, yes, I have the Turtle Van DVD set now, but honestly, other than the fact that it's the Turtle Van and it looks cool as the Turtle Van, that is the single worst way to ever store DVDs. What the hell were they thinking? Yes, the Turtle Van itself looks cool. But if you open that thing up, the top of it opens up, and the DVDs are just sitting there kind of in these little spindle pockets, but they can move, they can this. Like, there's no, like... At least with the Matrix set, they were in actual... individual boxes, like, you know what I mean, like they actually were a DVD box set. The Turtle Van thing is just 23 discs like you open the jukebox and they're just sitting there collecting dust. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Like I said, I love the idea of the Turtle Van DVD packaging, and I love the Turtle Van itself that I have now, but that's one of the worst ways to store disc media.
Yeah, probably. Not necessarily the most practical. Cartoon or cartoons, a couple of them, if you want to name them, have had the biggest impact on your life? Besides Transformers.
Always comes back to Transformers. So the lessons in He-Man, like, I think that's where most of my, like, morals came from. Most of my, the way my personality has been since, I want to say I was 6 years old to now at almost 42 years old. Those life lessons and those lessons that were taught, like, even as much as I dislike the character, even them teaching Kit, not Kit Cloud Kicker, that's Tailspin, Copper Kid, Copper Kid, what a joke. Even those lessons, you know, all of those end of, you know, whatever lessons were really, really good. Other ones that I can think of had the biggest impact. It wasn't – okay, so Transformers had long since – at least the Generation 1 version had long since been over. We went through the Beast era with Beast Wars and Beast Machines. And, yes, there is the Unicron trilogy, but I refuse to acknowledge that here. And then in – from 2007 to 2009, we had Animated. And I know you don't want to hear anything about Animated, and that's fine. However, I will say – with what they did with season 3 of Animated, that first three-parter opening, Transwarped, there were two moments where I just, like, did double takes. One, I did a fist bump, and then the other one, I nearly fell off my bed. So the two moments are when Rodimus shows up, and it's Judd Nelson doing the voice. That was the fist bump. And then falling out of bed was when... Because Shockwave had been in it the whole time. He was Long Arm Prime. He was Shockwave. He was a double agent. And he was still voiced by Corey Burton the whole time already. But in season 3, when he did the color swap, because that was the one thing I disliked with Animated, was the fact that Long Arm Prime, whatever, Shockwave, he was gray. He was this color. He wasn't – like Shockwave is only supposed to be purple, damn it. There is no gray, it's purple. So at the time in season 3 when he was like, and finally, Megatron, I can finally show you, you know, pledge my allegiance to you under my true colors. And they had the color fading and that, oh, I literally fell off my bed on a Saturday morning. And I was 2007, so I was like 27, 28 years old, whatever, however that, or maybe I was 29, I don't remember. But, yeah, no.
What's the most money you've ever spent on a cartoon-related item?
I gotta say...
Would it be, like, your most expensive toy you ever bought?
No. I mean, I've bought expensive toys, but... like, okay, so back when I was working with Boys Haven in Louisville, Kentucky... I had extra income coming in, and this was 2005, 2006. This was like my burgeoning on eBay, and this was like, ooh, I can reclaim my childhood. Optimus Prime, do you want Optimus Prime for $115? Sure, okay. Blaster for $120? Sure, fine. Soundwave for $104, you know, that kind of stuff. But I'm trying to think the most expensive – cartoon item, it honestly is trying to find, at the time, this was before the Shout Factory set, and even now the Shout Factory set because it's out of print and whatever, but when I was trying to find the original Rhino DVDs of Transformers, that was the most expensive thing, and when I bought the Turtle Van set, it was like $200-something to get it. And I was like, oh, I want it, but oh, that's $200. Damn it.
Those complete series sets sometimes can be expensive.
Yes, yes, they can.
All right, let's hear it then. I know you alluded to it earlier. My parents wouldn't let me watch that cartoon, so why wouldn't they let you watch The Simpsons?
Well, it goes beyond The Simpsons, actually. Okay. But I think it was, again, I want to say it was the debut episode, Santa's Little Helper. I want to say maybe, and I don't remember because I'm not looking at Santa's Little Helper, and it may not have been that episode, but it may have been an episode where Homer was choking Bart, or Homer said something flagrant, or Bart did something or whatever, and one of the adults in the room were like, oh my God, turn that off. You can't watch that. So that was 1989. Before that, in 1987, I believe this was a – no, it was Rebirth. Wow. It was either – was it Rebirth? I'm trying to remember which intro it was. Anyway, somebody – my aunt Debbie, my cousin Rachel's mother, Rachel, Robbie, and Cassie are my three cousins from Aunt Debbie – I was over at their house and I was watching one of the Transformers Generation 1 episodes, and my Aunt Debbie walks in and she swears, or at least at the time, she heard somebody on that cartoon episode say ass. Now, I since 2021, I have gone through every single iota of audio of all 98 episodes of the Transformers Generation 1 cartoon for the Geekcast Radio Network's Top 100 Transformers Characters Countdown. Ain't no robot in that entire cartoon said ass. But that's what happened, and she was like, oh, you can't watch that. For some odd reason, I think mainly because of the violence, my stepmother at the time was like, oh, you can't watch Batman the Animated Series. But it was never anything that, like, really stuck or anything. I just, like, again, that's why I ended up discovering it later, 96, 97, whatever. But with my mom didn't care because my mom knew how I was. My mom knew that I was being raised on common sense. Again, going back to some of those life lessons from He-Man and She-Ra and other cartoons and things like that, and just everything I grew up on. My mom, you know, my mom was showing me Freddy Krueger at 7 years old. I mean, come on. You know, if I can survive The Nightmare on Elm Street, I'm sure I can survive Rocko's Modern Life or whatever.
All right. What about, this is a whole can of worms, but what about your opinion on reboots? You know, which ones do you think have been the most successful? Should they happen? What's your opinion on reboots?
So there's a difference to me. Yes, there is the cartoon reboot. 2011 Thundercats was a reboot because it was a different story. It was not a continuation. It was not a continuing story. The Transformers franchise, there are no full-on reboots in the Transformers franchise to me because every iteration of a Transformers cartoon has been different. Yes, Animated started off with kind of the same way G1 started off, with the Transformers leaving Cybertron to go to Earth, but it's a whole story. It's not just rehashing. Same thing with the Netflix War for Cybertron trilogy. Yes, they're taking on the fact that there's X number of million year long war and the planet's dying and whatever else, but it's told in a different way. No one to this day in 2022 has ever just regurgitated Transformers Generation 1 as it was, other than The Adventures of the Cybernetic Space Cube. So for me, there's a whole difference. You have to do something completely different. Like, you know, you're going back to Thundercats. 2011 wasn't great, but it wasn't horrible to me. I didn't dislike it. I disliked some of the things that they did with it, and we'll get into that way, way down the line here in Tooncast. But after that, you have a decision of them making Thundercats roar. That's something. So again, Yes, I know certain reboots do happen and things like that, but as long as they're trying to be there, like, okay, you look at Revelation and you look at the Masters of the Universe Revelation on Netflix and He-Man and the Masters of the Universe on Netflix, the CGI one and the Kevin Smith one. Two very different things directed at two very different audiences. I don't give a shit about any of that. You look at the style of both of those cartoons. One cartoon is taking toyetic designs, and the Revelation series is kind of based on the toys because that's what Mattel owns and whatever else. It's not a direct sequel to Filmation at all, but they take various things and go various ways with it. And it's good. It's okay. There are things I disliked about it, and you guys can hear that in episode 127 and 128 of Powers of Grayskull series, just like, you know, you had issues with it and whatever else. With this new CGI series, which we have yet to record an episode about that, but with the CGI series, I watched it in one go, all the episodes in like one morning, because I really enjoyed it. I thought it was great. The voice acting was really good. The animation was, I want to say, kind of the standard 2D animation we get nowadays, the standard CGI animation, but it was a slightly different look. And after I watched the, I think it's, what is it, got 10 episodes for the first season?
Something like that.
Yeah, I think so. You know, first of all, we got all 10 episodes at once. We didn't have to do a 5 and 5. Thank God. Second of all, I feel like they have taken with that CGI series the roots of what Filmation He-Man and the Masters of the Universe was and made it like 1983 when we were young, like, you know, you were only 2 years old. I was 3 years old. Huh. But by the time we ended up seeing the original Filmation show, let's say 85, 86, whatever, because of syndication, when we were watching that, that was our introduction to the character, to that universe. The way I feel about the CGI version of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, that is like kids of this generation, that should be their introduction. Because to me, after watching those 10 episodes, I was like, well, damn, it's 1982 in the modern day. Because it just felt like the Filmation series moved forward several decades, and you have this new kind of spin and new types of care. Like, you don't always need all I remember everybody was joking and laughing and whatever about Ram Ma'am. Whatever. It's a character name. I mean, oh my God, it's not the end of the fucking world. But her as a character and what she does to implement the team and how all of that goes, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. So, yeah, there are plenty of reboots that I like, and there are plenty of reboots that I just don't think should have happened.
I will keep my Masters of the Universe and my Transformers animated opinions to myself. I've been told I'm not allowed to share them at this time. It's too
soon. I never said that. I never said that.
Such and such. Anyway. anywho. All right. So those, we've had a lot of Transformers reboots, obviously. We've had a lot of G.I. Joe. We've had a lot of He-Man.
Had a lot of G.I. Joe. There are four.
There was early on. There was like four or five, like in the late 90s, early 2000s. We haven't had a whole lot since. Obviously, we've had a lot of He-Man and Transformers for sure. Are there any cartoon series from the past that you would want to see more of, and whether it would be a reboot, a live action movie, just a remake completely?
I have often said in the last couple of years that I would love to see G1 pulled forward into the modern day, like that whole style. Mm-hmm. You're not obviously going to be able to get all the voice actors because sadly some of them are no longer with us, like Scatman Carruthers and things like that. But you take the Generation 1 format and universe, pull it forward into the modern day, and I would love to see that style again as a cartoon on streaming services or whatever. Because that's the other thing that's changed with cartoons. Like, you know, we talked about how, you know, weekday morning, weekday afternoon, or Saturday morning. In the last 40 or 50 years now, we've got streaming services and online and the internet and this, that, and the other thing and everything else. So it's so much different now. And I just would love to see that Transformers Generation 1 style and story arc continue. That's just one that I can think of. Others, not so much, because I view them in the time that they were made.
Okay.
Like, people are so – I see articles online about, you know, oh, this – you know, certain websites, and I assume they have an algorithm, and I'm not going to mention who they are, but most people will know. These five episodes of G.I. Joe are the best, and these, you know, five episodes that are the best of this and five episodes that are the worst, or five things that are really awesome about this, or five things that really suck about this, or five things. It's mostly the negative side of these articles that are like five things that would never hold up today from She-Ra or whatever. You know what I mean? And it's like, oh God, why can't you focus and look on these things as, like, even though I just said I would love to see the Generation 1 Transformers cartoon brought into the modern day, not to change it, to add to it. That's what I want to see.
Right.
But some of these people are like, they won't look at it in the time it was made. You look at the top of your head, without thinking about it, number one favorite cartoon of the 80s for you. You're on a desert island and you only get one choice. What would you choose?
Mm-hmm.
Answer me.
Oh, you're asking me? I thought
yes. No, yes.
I'm not the one that's supposed to be answering questions
now. But I'm trying to prove a point.
Say it again so I know exactly the specifics.
Your number one favorite end-all, be-all 80s cartoon, the one you would be on a desert island with that you would have to watch for the rest of your life.
Transformers G1.
Okay. You look at that in the time that it was made, 1984 to 1987, and everything else that was going on at that time with He-Man and She-Ra and Thundercats, like, all that's my point here. You take something and you look at it in the time that it was made. You don't try – some of these people online are like, I really want to make this fit for the modern day. No, you don't do that. You maybe start something new or different and use elements of – but you don't compare what we've already had to what we currently have, because there is no comparison kind of thing.
Fair enough. All right, we're going to skip past the next one. You've already talked about how you hate cartoon sidekicks.
No, we're not skipping any questions.
Well, you already said you hate them.
I don't necessarily hate them. I mean, Scrappy-Doo is the single greatest cartoon sidekick of all time. Because the thing with Scrappy is I was always the quiet kid. I was always the kid – I said this recently in a Facebook post. I've always preferred being alone. Being by myself, I never need, like, as much as I had a few friends here and there as a, you know, kindergartner for, you know, elementary school age kid, whatever, I would rather be at home watching cartoons by myself or with my mom or whatever, you know what I mean? But, like, I could go in my room and read a book for 2 or 3 hours and be fine. I don't need other human interactions all of the time kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, I just feel like, you know, as a kid, I was in somewhat of a shell. And seeing Scrappy and how he was like, I'm sure I'll put it in here somewhere, but, you know, let me at him, put him up, you know. You know, his can-do attitude, his non-fraidy Scooby attitude where he was, you know, wanting to run into the danger, where he was wanting to face his fears. Again, going back to the cartoon lessons, that's what Scrappy taught me, was to eventually you're going to have to face your fears. You're going to have to face your bullies. You're going to have to face this or face that. And that's why I like him. Do I not like Scooby because Scooby's a fraidy dog? No, that's what his character is and whatever else. But as a cartoon sidekick, Scrappy, in my personal opinion, rules because he taught me to kind of stand up for myself.
Oh, yeah? Well, my Uncle Scooby can handle any old snake demon, and he'll just get a hold of you, so he's gonna bite you and snap you.
We here at Tooncast have found the one human being on planet Earth that was positively impacted by Scrappy Doo. If we have done nothing else, we have done that over all of these episodes. All right. In your opinion, which decade represents the golden era of cartoons? So that's a term you always get thrown around, golden era of music, golden era of this, that, and the other, blah, blah, blah. And sometimes you hear it bantied about when it comes to cartoons, you know, whether it be the classic era with Looney Tunes and Hanna-Barbera, whether it be, you know, one of these decades that we grew up on, whether it's happening right now. What is your opinion of the golden era of cartoons, and why do you pick that?
God. Well, I wouldn't say it's right now. I would not say it's the 2020s. Not that that's listed here. Like you said, you get the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 2000s, and 2010s. I would say that it's, for the action cartoons, it's got to be the 80s or the 90s, but I'm going to stick with the 80s because there were a hell of a lot of action cartoons in the 80s.
Yeah.
And I think for that specific genre, in the 60s and 70s, you had, I don't want to say just say Josie and the Pussycats, but you had like Johnny Quest, and, you know, you had all of that stuff. You had Space Ghost. You had the Super Friends and their various shows, but I didn't end up, because I was born in 1980, I didn't end up seeing the Challenge of the Super Friends or whatever other titles that that series used. I didn't end up seeing those until like the mid-80s. I know the Jetsons started in the 60s and the Flintstones started 60s or 50s for 50s. Flintstones? 50s, okay. So all of that, because I was born in 80, I was seeing it as reruns around these action cartoons that I was watching. So again, the 80s, I would say, would be the main golden era, because in the 90s, they were trying to do all new stuff, all different stuff. All, you know, 90s was a transitional decade, I think. But the 80s, because you had literally everything. I was watching Pink Panther. I was watching Looney Tunes. I was watching Merry Melodies. I was watching Mickey Mouse cartoons. I was watching the Flintstones, the Jetsons.
I take that back. I thought it started in 58, but it was started in 60.
That's what I thought. Oh, so Flintstones and Jetsons original. Yes. Flintstones was 60, and then I remember specifically Jetsons was 1962, or I think, originally. But then the Jeffersons, the Jetsons came back in the 80s. So for me, the golden era of cartoons, because you literally had everything that you could possibly watch, and only on like six channels. I would say by 1989, we had, you know, besides NBC, CBS, ABC, we had Fox, we had, you know, whatever, you know, we had five or six channels by the end of the 80s. You had a smorgasbord of everything from those past decades that you didn't grow up in that you could see. Same thing with Looney Tunes. Looney Tunes started back in the 1920s or 30s or something. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You know, you had all of that. And I saw, I wasn't just watching the 80s action cartoon. I was watching everything. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I got to say, the 80s is the golden era of cartoons, because literally with syndication and all of that and reruns, we had everything.
Yeah, I would agree with you, and it's not just because I was growing up in that time. I think the only competition is like the classic Hanna-Barbera era, you know, when all that stuff was happening alongside Looney Tunes and things of that nature. Yeah. I will say that there has been some good stuff in the last, you know, 10 to 15 years. It's come a long way. I was not a big fan of the mid-90s to mid-aughts. I just some weird stuff happening then in cartoons, and the 70s was kind of a black hole for cartoons, so it definitely wouldn't be that. But yeah. I'm with you. I think the 80s, especially if you're putting the caveat, like if you're specifically looking at like action cartoons and things of that nature, you know, boys action cartoons and stuff like that, there was never more choices than there was in the 80s. So some people like to look down on us for, you know, enjoying cartoons. Some people view cartoons as something that's only for little kids. It's for children. You know, anything animated shouldn't be watched by adults and things of that nature. So in your opinion, who are cartoons made for? Who should they be made for? And what is the, you know, what's the demographic that should be watching cartoons?
In 2022, I'm just going to say the last 100 years from 1922 to 2022, cartoons are for all of us. Yes, there are different types of cartoons that are for very, like, I'm not going to sit here and watch Caillou or any of the stuff that's on Disney Junior, because I know that that is for kids of a certain age. That is for little kids. That's for younger kids. But with the way that the world has changed since we grew up in the 80s, with the birth of the internet, with, you know, all of this stuff now basically being at our fingertips, and we can, like, I can go to Boomerang and I can watch any episode of Looney Tunes I want to watch, or Pink Panther or whatever, or I can go to Disney Plus and I can watch the old 90s Marvel you know, X-Men and Spider-Man and whatever else. You know, we can go on Tubi.tv and watch Transformers Generation 1. Or if you have the physical media, you can watch the physical, you know, the DVDs. I would say that cartoons are for everybody, no matter who you are. It's not just for kids. It's not just – because, again, these cartoons, as we – have grown up and as pop culture has changed and we now have a, you know, burgeoning, you know, whole thing of geek culture over the last 20 years or so, maybe 10 to 15, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, you know, geek culture is a thing. Hello, this is called the Geekcast Radio Network. Right. You know what I mean? So, I mean, with geek culture, it's, you know, it just depends on what you grew up with. And if you're still watching cartoons today, it's, you know, for pure enjoyment. It's, or it's for, you know, running a decade long podcast review series about, you know what I mean? But it's like, it's not like, I know what you're getting at. And I understand what the question is saying with how it's just, it's for children versus adults. That was the thinking of the 70s, 80s, and 90s, because
it's the same way that people viewed, like, people that watched wrestling or people that watched, like, certain things. Yeah. Like, if you didn't, there was a lot more rules back in our day growing up as far as, like, what society accepted that you were supposed to watch on TV. And if you watched the fringe stuff, or if you watched something that wasn't, you know, the demographic target audience, then you often got looked down on. So that's kind of why I threw that in there. So, okay. We're going to have some fun for the rest of the way out. Not that we haven't had this whole time, but we've been grilling Mike on a bunch of questions and trying to, you know, make him remember things and such and such. So we're going to try to be a little bit more loose, a little bit more fun for the rest of the way out. We're calling it the Fictional Fantasy Fun. It begins here. Mike, if you could own any vehicle featured in a cartoon, what would it be?
Can't wait till I do this episode, this format with TV's Mr. Neal. And I'm not saying this just because of that. I'm saying this because I've thought about this, and there is only one answer.
There are so many answers.
For me, personally, there is only one answer. I want to be the kid in the exosuit getting into Rodimus Prime at the end of Transformers the movie. Rodimus Prime would be my vehicle of choice.
All right, fair enough. Question number 26 here. If you could live in any cartoon world that you wanted, where would you live? So many choices. You could be in space. You can be in water. You can be on Earth. You can be on some alien planet. Different time eras.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Lots to consider.
Yep. I think I would, as much as I would probably dislike the environment of it, but Cybertron, but Beast Machines, Cybertron.
You're going to live in a robot world with nothing. You can't breathe there, probably. You
have
I'm just kidding.
I would have an exosuit. Okay. Whether I have food or not is another thing. I mean, I'm sure I could learn to love Energon cubes.
So unfortunately, you've used all of your Transformers answers that you can. You've got to go somewhere else now. all right. So if you can pick any three cartoon characters, they're going to be a quartet with you. Whether it's, you know, you guys solving mysteries, or whether it's you guys making mischief, or whether it's you guys have a band or saving the world, you have three compadres you can bring with you. Who are they going to be?
Bartman.
I'll keep thinking.
As in, do the Bartman.
I'm Bartman.
Scrappy Doo.
Scrappy?
We're gonna catch us a monster, huh?
Follow me!
And Rodimus Prime.
Relax! Enjoy the ride!
What? First of all, you can't use another Transformers answer. We've already vetoed that. You've used Rodimus Prime three times now.
Fine, Astro Train, so he can transport Scrappy and
taking Rodimus Prime and Scrappy Doo as two of your three cartoon friends eliminates all validity.
No! You told me I couldn't use Rodimus, so I
know,
changed
but if
it.
You did, your original answer was two of the worst characters that you could possibly take with you. Who was the third one? I forgot. I was thrown off by the other two.
If you can do the Bart, you're bad like Michael Jackson.
So we'll just go with what I originally chose, except I will replace Rodimus with Astro Train, so that way he can transport the rest of us.
Jettison some weight, or I'll never make it to Cybertron!
Is this the fate of the mighty Decepticon Empire?
In the days of Megatron, it was not like this.
You mean Galvatron?
Hail Galvatron!
Well, they were the same guy.
All right, next up, if you could date any cartoon character, who are you dating?
Jessica Rabbit.
I'm not bad. I'm just drawn that way.
Hands right, down.
I feel like that'll get a lot of answers here on this, depending on how many times we run this survey. There's a few that will kind of rise to the top, and I think that she's in the running for one of the top three answers.
All right,
one more fictional fantasy fun question here. What is your holy grail of cartoon artifacts? This could be a device. This could be a weapon. This could be an accessory. This could be like a helmet. It could be anything like that. So what is the holy grail of cartoon artifacts for you? Or objects or items that you could hold if you were a cartoon character. Then it cannot be Rodimus Prime.
No.
Helmet.
No. Well,
Scrappy's tail. It can't be anything.
No. The examples that we give here, folks, the Sword of Omens, Matrix of Leadership, the Power Sword from He-Man kind of thing. The first thing I thought of was Rat Trap in Optimal Situation in Beast Wars. What? You can't hold two sparks in your body. So technically, I would take the spark of Optimus Prime.
Good Lord. If you can't tell, Mike likes Transformers, folks.
Okay.
Nothing wrong with that. I like Transformers, too. I mean,
seriously, though, it would probably be... I'm not much of a swordsman, so literally, seriously, it would probably be the Matrix of Leadership, because not only is it the wisdom of, you know, it's the well of wisdom and knowledge and whatever. And
the wisdom of the ages. It's lost.
No, not lost. We're all a little wiser now.
But the Matrix is empty.
It's up to all of us to fill it again with the wisdom we accumulate from this moment on. Autobots, transform and roll out!
Eventually, when you have to use that against a giant Omicron virus to defeat it, you know, you have to refill it with new wisdom. So I guess technically my choice would be the Matrix of Leadership.
All right. So a little insight into how Mike's mind works there with our fictional fantasy fun. But to end, let's get a little bit more serious, I guess, and give you a chance to sound off one last time. This is our last question of the episode. Mike, what is one piece of advice that you would give cartoon fandom in general?
Just enjoy it. You know, like I said earlier, I look at cartoons and the time that they were made. So if I'm watching a cartoon series from the, let's just say the Jetsons or the Flintstones, so from the 60s for the original runs, or something from the 80s or something from the 90s. And, you know, you look at the 90s and there are a lot of cartoons that we didn't even mention on here, but like stuff like Courage the Cowardly Dog or Doug or Powerpuff Girls or, you know, whatever kind of thing, you know, look at it in the time that it was made and just enjoy it for what it is.
Yeah. It's something that's hard to do in this internet world where everybody's on social media and everybody wants to interact and respond to what people post and this, that, and the other. But it's something you got to try to remember. If you like it, talk about it. You know, engage with other people that like it, whatever. If someone's posting about something that you don't like, maybe just let it go.
So, you know, I'm going to say this here, and I'm not going to say because I don't remember the girl's name, but I'm in the – on Facebook, I am in the Gary Chalkboard Facebook group. It's basically Gary's, you know, fan page, whatever. And somebody posed a question of – at the end of Other Voices Part 2. So this is the end of Season 1 of Beast Wars going into Season 2. Why didn't Optimus find another way to get out of the pod that he was piloting to, you know, whatever? Well, Megatron magna-sealed it, and Megatron took it over. And they're like, but why didn't he find some other way? So as of this recording, all day today, I have gone through literally every single second of the last moments of Other Voices Part 2 and the first 15 minutes of Aftermath, which was the Season 2 premiere of Beast Wars. And I'm like, because they were wondering, like, why he didn't escape, why he didn't just break it open or whatever with his cannon or something or gun or whatever. And I'm looking at this thing and I'm like, well, then it's a Season 1 finale. They want to leave it on a cliffhanger. They want to leave it on a to be continued. If Optimus had gotten out like he was initially supposed to, you wouldn't have Optimus Primal's death. You wouldn't have all of the character reactions that we had in Aftermath. You wouldn't have Mystic Rhino Rhinox trying to get his spark, you know, trying to get Optimus Primal's spark. You wouldn't have all of that story building without Optimus being trapped in the pod. I don't know. Just some people just don't understand cliffhanger writing or story, whatever. Again, right, going back to the whole thing of we now live in a world where with the internet, instead of enjoying the stuff, people want to pose the question that will eventually create arguments because the question is freaking stupid.
Well, or they just want to attack anything they don't like.
That's true.
So, would you this is our Tooncast Origins episodes where we get to go through and figure out what you like or dislike about cartoons and kind of learn more about both our hosts, our co-hosts, our guests, our audience. So if you would like to be on an Origins episode here, send an email to feedback@geekcastradio.com with the subject line Tooncast Origins guest spot. Just remember, you have to have at least a little bit of time, you know, as far as podcast experience. You're going to have a mic. You're going to have a way to record, etc. So we can fill you in on the details if you email that message to us. We'll fill you in. But that is it for this episode. We'd like to thank you for joining us here on Tooncast. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Mike, what are those ways?
You can visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can listen to and comment on all of our content. Send us email, as Optimus Solo already said, feedback@geekcastradio.com. Here are all the ways you can listen to us nowadays. Apple and Google Podcasts, leave us reviews, please. Yes, iTunes is still a thing, folks. Spotify and any other podcatching client you choose to use. Follow us on Twitter at GCR and TuneCast, and TuneCast Beyond are for the show. I am at TFU and Mike. What is your Twitter?
My Twitter is at Optimus Solo.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork. You can also go to TuneCast, all tunes all the time over there as well. We hope you enjoyed this episode of TuneCast. I wish you'll join us next time when we will be giving you our thoughts on something. It's the beginning of 2022, folks. I have not had a chance to plan anything. I'm sure it may be another TuneCast Origins, because my goal with starting the Origins here in TuneCast was for Optimus Solo, Steve Megatron, and myself to have our episodes done before I start advertising to other friends of mine that want to come on and have me grill them through these 30 questions of cartoon accuracy or inaccuracy or whatever you want to call it. For now, I am TF2 and Mike with
Optimus Solo.
Thank you for listening, and until next time. Oh yeah, unleash the tune in you.
You did it, Uncle Scooby. You got the star creature right where we want him. Ruff, ruff, and double ruff.
Beyond good, beyond evil, beyond your wildest imagination.